trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, absolutely, because I can't...
Something either got to be true or not.
I can't... No. Well, good evening, oh really, radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, along with David O'Connor. And this is show 41 for Friday, January 16th, 2015. At least I'm doing pretty good at remembering that it's 2015. And for that...
You have done that.
And for that, I'm not writing any checks. I'm not having to actually put it on anything. So I guess if that was my New Year's resolution of just remembering what the hell the year was, I'm doing A-okay. But I don't do those resolutions things anymore. So that's old stuff. I don't do that. So how you been? Doing good?
Good.
Excellent. I'm exhausted.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm absolutely exhausted. I'm tired. I'm even more tired than last week, right at the tail, when I was reading a script and lost my place and completely flubbed up the end credits while we were talking to the nice people from No Religion Required podcast.
They're good folks.
They are very good folk. Hope to see them again very soon. And of course, I'm going to see them at ReasonCon. And if anyone would like to accompany me to ReasonCon, you know, please contact me directly and we'll make some arrangements. Maybe we can convoy up from the great state of Florida to Hickory, North Carolina.
We'll have to see. I might go. I might not. Probably not, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, if you can, then I know who you're going with. This guy right here. Okay. So let's see. We got some interesting news. A couple stories broke just today, and I want to hit those right at the top. And that would be the Supreme Court today agreed to actually decide whether or not all 50 states in the union must allow gay and lesbian couples to marry. It's some big news. Because so far, they have managed to avoid it.
Dodge, duck, dive, and dodge.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But finally, when they opened the door with which decision was it? It was the one that allowed, that basically mandated that if you're a federal employee, then your spouse, regardless of what state you're in, is on your insurance, is recognized as your spouse. That's a big deal. And that essentially said to many other jurisdictions that, oh, so we have to recognize it federally, basically. So it made the decision very easy for them to do.
Except for Ohio.
Well, yeah. That was the United States versus Windsor. The movement for same-sex marriage, what turned out to be a powerful tailwind, decision struck down the part of the Defense of Marriage Act that barred federal benefits for same-sex couples married in states that allowed such unions. So, now the thing that really, it's Ohio. These guys, they really tweaked me with their response here.
It's quite a response.
Obergefell versus Hodges, number 14-556 from Ohio and Tanko versus Haslam, number 14-562 from Tennessee, challenged state laws barring the recognition of same-sex marriage performed elsewhere. To quote, Ohio does not contest the validity of their out-of-state marriages. The plaintiffs seeking to overturn the ban wrote in their brief, seeking Supreme Court review, it simply refuses to recognize them. Let that sink in. Yeah. I know your marriage is valid, but I don't like it, so no.
It's more like, I know your marriage is valid elsewhere, but not here, so go away. Please. That's kind of what I get out of that.
It's that NIMBY thing, not in my backyard.
Yeah.
So go get out of here. It's like, that's nice. You can be married over there in that other state, far away from me. So really,
it's the whole freedom to we don't want your kind here.
It really is. It really is. And that, I mean, it's so close to just being an outright bigot.
It's in as close as you can come to being an outright bigot without actually admitting it.
But in a court brief, I mean, oh my God, that just, it jumped right out at me. And obviously it did for the good folks over at New York Times that have wrote this article that we're quoting. You'll find the link in our show notes at oreillyradio.com, show 41. So we're going to be watching that. They're going to be hearing this in, before the end of their actual term in, April. So we'll be following up on this one. It's going to be something that we really need to look at.
Well, that, whatever the decision is, it will make waves.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It should be on every news. Even Fox.
The herd will be strong is what I predict.
The court said it will hear 2.5 hours of argument, probably in the last week of April. The first 90 minutes will be devoted to the question of whether the Constitution requires states to license marriage between two people of the same sex. In that regard, no. The Constitution does not require it. It also does not forbid it.
Right.
So, it's a much bigger issue than that. And I think with that kind of weasel word right there, they're going to kind of do the Heisman again and bypass the whole thing. Nice little Statue of Liberty play or something.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we do know that one of the justices, Scalia specifically, is very against having to talk about homosexuality.
Yeah, you got 5 Catholics and 4 Jews.
Well, he actually like was moved to tears about not wanting to talk about gay sex. One of the prior.
Yeah, this is not the court that I wanted to hear this case. However,
this is the court we have.
And perhaps better the devil you know. You know,
I think ultimately they will allow it.
The title pressure behind it, more than half the states already have allowed it. The number of lives that they would affect if they then put down something that said no, as opposed to just the yes. The yes is a far easier decision to make because less people are damaged. In fact, no people are actually damaged because guess what?
Yeah.
Gay marriage does not affect straight marriages. It has zero effect on anybody that is not getting married.
Well,
to a gay person.
To play devil's advocate.
Oh, please. Yes. Let's
see. If you're in a straight marriage.
Okay.
And one of you is closet gay.
Okay.
It will affect your marriage.
Well,
probably.
Yeah, but if you're in a straight marriage, then that's just, quote, irreconcilable differences, and there's divorces for that. Along with...
There's a lot of families today that say, we don't divorce in our family.
That's nice. In fact, actually, that is nice, because I would like to see, speaking as somebody that is now divorced, I would like to see more people really work hard at the relationship that they've committed to. We do seem to have a slipping away of that committed relationship and really the commitment to that partner. I don't know what that means, because there's so many different facets of humanity. Maybe we're just more comfortable now with our sexuality as a whole.
Well, there's a possibility that people change over time, too.
Oh, so, no, there's a guarantee that people change over time.
Yeah. Let me rephrase that. There's a guarantee that people will change over time. They won't necessarily change in ways in which they're more compatible.
Agreed.
Or the same compatible.
Agreed entirely.
So you can do everything right and still fail.
I know all about that. I've said that myself. I've been there.
It happens.
It does. It happens.
So we celebrate Festivus.
Yes, the holiday for the rest of us. So we will keep our eyes on the SCOTUS for what they come up with off the top of their heads sometime. Oh, basically, we're probably going to see it in June. Well, April, May. Yeah, so May.
April, May.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
We'll hope that the
and we will cover it here.
Red sky at night.
Yeah, we will cover it here. Let's see. We have
some... may not hear it here at first.
No,
but you'll hear it here.
Yeah, that's very true. The Twitterverse will catch fire with it. Okay.
The Twitter games.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, something along those lines.
Catching fire.
So let's stay on Capitol Hill for a moment. And I saw something terrible. Just as we were starting the show, so it made it actually down into Popery. And the new Congress, as it is beginning its onslaught on the people, begins an anti-environment attack with a, quote, no more national parks bill. I literally just saw this, so you're going to go through it with me in the audience here. Let's see. Earlier this week, Representative Don Young, Republican out of Arkansas, introduced a bill to strip current and future presidents' authority to designate national monuments, proposing an overhaul to a law that presidents have used for nearly a century to protect some of the country's most iconic and treasured places. The bill,
over a century now.
Yeah. The bill introduced Tuesday would amend the 1906 Antiquities Act to effectively block the president from designating any new national monuments without congressional approval and an extensive environmental review. Additionally, the bill would require the president to seek approval from nearby state governments for marine monument proposals. You know, on the surface, that doesn't sound horrible. That sounds fairly...
It's all about context.
Yeah, that sounds fairly responsible, actually, because, yeah, if we're going to have to pay for it in perpetuity, as it's a national park and all that, then... Yeah, we should have some oversight on that. I agree with that. And we should have extensive environmental review. But
in context,
let's see.
This is about perpetuating the agenda of stopping all progress, all activities, all actions by the executive branch whatsoever for the sake of making one man look bad. So that they can grab power.
Do you think this is specifically, well, let's see. 16 presidents, both Republicans and Democrats, have used the Antiquities Act to permanently protect public land and historic sites since the Act's passage in 1906. Some of America's most beloved and iconic landmarks, like the Grand Tetons and the Arches National Park, were originally protected as national monuments under the Act. President Obama recently used the Act for the 13th time in his presidency to protect the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument outside of Los Angeles.
Is there a reason why that should not be protected?
I have no idea why that would not be something that we'd want protected. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, they did another additional hyperlink in here to President Obama's national monuments, the 13. Let's see, First State National Monument, Fort Monroe, Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad National Monument, Charles Young Buffalo Soldier National Monument, Chimney Rock National Monument, San Juan Island National Monument, Fort Ord National Monument, California Coastal National Monument, Cesar Chavez National Monument, San Gabriel Mountains, Oregon Mountains. Now, that's not Oregon. That's Oregon. O-R-G-A-N Mountains, and that's somewhere in Texas. And also the Pacific Remote Islands Marine National Monument. I wonder if that's the one that they're really up in arms about. So he's done it 13 times. Bill Clinton, he did it 19 times, and George W. Bush did only 5, apparently. So history is one of those interesting things that we can actually look back on if they don't rewrite it for us. Representative Young, who has co-sponsored similar legislation in the past, is one of several other members of Congress who are fighting to gut the Antiquities Act and weaken protections on public lands, but who feature national monuments prominently on social media and their websites. That's funny. The background of Representative Young's website currently features a stock photo of Denali National Park and Preserve, a portion of which was originally designated as a national monument by President Carter in 1978. I'm not sure why they're doing this, but apparently this is not new. Last March, the House passed legislation to block presidents from establishing national monuments by limiting the number of designations a president can make per term and creating additional roadblocks to limit executive authority under the act. You know, maybe this is just trying to neuter the presidency.
It's trying to neuter the executive branch. And then, if we take a step back and look at the macro focus, the big game, there's a lot of gerrymandering.
Yes.
So there's a lot of people wearing red who cannot lose elections. That's the end result of most of the gerrymandering. There are some people in blue, but predominantly, it benefits people who are in the Grand Old Party.
Yeah.
So they've got the legislative branch.
Fairly well tied up in most regions, yeah.
And in all probability, they're going to lose the next presidential election. There are some who have gone so far as to say that it's already been won, we're just waiting for history to catch up.
Yeah, I can see that, but also we don't know who's going to run. Not entirely. Not entirely.
I think that's on purpose.
I don't know that they have anybody good to put up there.
The GOP doesn't have anybody good to go up there.
I think Ryan might try.
He will fail.
I don't think Rand Paul is going to do it. I know that Romney is barking at
Rand Paul,
chomping at the bit to do it
if
again.
If he believed that he could win. And I don't believe that he believes that.
No, he still has to slough off a little bit more of the crazy from his father and, of course, the things that he's done himself to actually be considered moderate enough to actually be elected as a president.
Yeah, but he has to be moderate enough to be elected as a president. And the GOP climate has to allow for somebody who's moderate enough to be elected as president.
Yeah.
And they do not.
No. I'm really curious, actually, with the schism. Now we get into real politics here. With the schism that's happened in the Grand Ole Party, you have the Republicans and then you have the Tea Party. They're really two different parties. They have a lot of similar ideas.
The Tea Party is the bastard red-headed stepchild produced by the GOP to try and win an election.
And it was a failure. And it has grown out of control because it still exists.
It has grown out of control. But that is a conservative voting bloc that they still want and they still need if they're going to win elections.
Mm-hmm.
So they are trying desperately to get them back under the fold, which they cannot do. It has taken on a life of its own, far better than any party that has come before.
I know, yeah.
On purpose to try to add a third party into the system.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We might end up with a third party because of this. And because
we certainly will.
That would eat the lunch of the actual GOP.
Yeah, the GOP will never win another presidential election because of the sins of the Tea Party.
Yeah, they're a party divided completely.
They are a party divided, and they will never reconnect because the Tea Party is so far right they cannot connect with the majority of America.
They've gone too far. They would have to go all the way around again, and they
can't. In order to get those Tea Party people back. The GOP has to go just as far right.
Yeah, and they're not willing to do that because it's crazy talk.
They cannot do because they will alienate the majority of America.
Yeah, because it's
so they're fucked.
Because it's what we see, or what Fox would have us believe, is that they are the majority of the people. But really, no, it's a minority that is just very loud.
If you look at voting overall, I think in average years, like 50% of the voting populace actually goes out and votes.
No, it's less than that. Less than that. It's usually like 42%. Yeah, it's
rounding
it's,
up. It's half.
Yeah, it's not even half though, really. I mean,
so you're talking about
if we see 60%, it was a grand turnout, that kind of thing.
Yeah, at most. 25% of us are deciding everything.
Yeah.
Because a lot of races are close.
Yeah.
But that still is, you know, only 40-50% of the people voting.
Among the people that are motivated enough to get off their duffs and actually go get the little I voted sticker, yeah.
So 1 in 4 people are deciding every election.
I specifically went to counteract my father's vote, really. That's pretty much what I came down to. Much of the ideals of the Tea Party and the GOP to a lesser extent are very old ideas. I don't see a whole lot of young Tea Partiers out there.
They're out there.
Yeah.
They're paid?
A lot of them. Yeah, that may be the case. I mean, traditionally, the more liberal ideas come with the young people, the younger age. And of course, the old trope is, you know, you start off as a liberal Democrat, and as you get older and have to make more money, you end up being a more conservative Republican. That may be the case.
I think one of my old supervisors broke it down best.
Okay.
These people are fiscally conservative.
Yeah.
And socially liberal. That's most people.
Yeah. That's where I would fit. Yeah. I would like spending to be under control. I also think that the money that I don't think we have to raise more taxes. I just think we have to spend smarter.
I think we have to raise taxes.
I think we need to shoot less bullets.
That could happen.
I think we could close down,
I'd say, 140 military bases around the world.
When more than half of our budget goes to defense, and I have never felt threatened, something is wrong.
It's not. The Department of Defense is no longer the Department of Defense. Because the Department of Defense was founded to defend against attacks from abroad.
Is it the Department of Peace?
Military forces.
Is it the Department of Peace?
We are no longer fighting military forces. We are fighting terrorist cells.
We're not even fighting terrorist cells. We're fighting terrorist ideas.
Gee, that's worse.
I know. We're facing ideas. You can't.
Ideas are bulletproof.
Exactly. Thank you, V for Vendetta. Yes. Ideas are bulletproof.
There is only one thing that fights ideas.
Better ideas. Stronger ideas. Things that make sense.
More ideas. Different ideas.
Yeah, more ideas. Opposing viewpoints. You know, the wars that they're fighting
are not wars that can be won with guns. They're wars that can be won with diplomacy. Proper diplomacy.
Every time you kill one terrorist, you create two more. Is pretty much the math.
Minimum, yeah.
Because terrorist is such a dehumanizing thing that people forget. That's a person.
Yeah.
They came from somewhere.
They have a mother. And they have a father. They have people that care about what happens to them.
People who follow Islam breed. They've got moms, dads, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, cousins out the wazoo.
Yeah. That is one thing that they certainly have in abundance is typically the Muslim families
in
the Middle East in particular, in the region of the Fertile Crescent and beyond.
Oh, it's fertile.
Yeah.
They are breeding.
Well, that seems to be the number one entertainment thing that they can do, since, you know, they can't really surf the internet because that's been blocked by the government. They can't really watch any good TV.
Porn. So, of course, that's blocked by the government.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
not every fatwa out there.
Yeah. All the fatwas basically take away anything that's fun, except for, there was a, I'm not sure which country it was. I think it was Saudi Arabia. But they were trying to get the age of consent to marry raised to 15. Raised to 15.
It is 9, isn't it?
It is currently nothing.
Oh.
Now, 9 is when Muhammad took Aisha to bed for the first time. He married her when she was 6. Go ahead, read the Quran. Peace be upon him, or whatever.
Praise be to Allah?
Well, yeah, the PBH, that's peace be upon him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or praise be to Allah. Allah Akbar, whatever. Etc. I am not a Muslim. And since I'm in the United States, I can criticize their holy book and their practices with impunity. Just as I do with all other books, so don't think you're special. But yeah, so they failed to do a simple act as that of raising the age of consent to marry to even what we consider in the United States to be still too low. 16? No. 15. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's still pretty too young. You're allowed to get a learner's permit to drive a car.
16 is allowable in the United States under very specific...
With parental consent. I think that's the age of parental consent here in Florida. I would not consent as a parent at that age. That's too young.
It should be 18 and that's it.
It should be.
There's no reason to get married at 16.
If you are old, I feel very strongly that if you are old enough to serve your country and die for your country, you're old enough to drink and you're certainly old enough to make your own decisions.
Yeah.
So I think that the legal drinking age should also be lowered to 18. Or the age of adulthood should be raised to 21. You can't join the military until you're older. But that wouldn't work out either.
To that anyway, we were talking about this the other night, actually. I looked it up. The Air Force raised their maximum first-time enlistment age to 39.
Really?
So, yeah. Never been in the armed forces before? You can join the Air Force until you're 39.
Maybe I should go fly some drones.
Right? I was considering that.
It's an interesting idea. 39.
There's certainly job prospects after the fact.
Wow, 39.
Because you know what a lot of the guys do who are into specialty things that the military still needs. After they leave the military 5 years, they get paid like 6 figures to do it some more.
Yeah.
And that's flying drones ain't bad.
No, if you're good at it. If you're good at it, and you can, deal with it.
The drones, there's hundreds of jobs based on each individual drone.
Yeah, we definitely went into that. And that was in our last show 40, we talked about America's drone problem and the drone problem being that they're too popular and that we are running out of people to truly service this fleet.
No, of course they're popular. They're awesome.
Yeah. Whatever you may think about these winged angels of death being piloted remotely, they're really effective at what they do and they're not going away.
And your sons and daughters aren't dying on reconnaissance missions needlessly.
Yeah. And mostly, really mostly, they're used for surveillance. Rarely.
It's saving hundreds of billions of dollars on satellites.
Yeah.
And it gets the job done far better than a satellite could, because the terrorists know when the satellite's coming overhead.
Yeah.
And they have learned to hide.
Yeah, they can loiter. They're very small targets and painted properly. They can loiter above visual range, essentially. They just blend in with the... with the ceiling.
Sky, you yeah. cannot see them.
No, it would appear as a bird. It would
the optics. The optics are so good; it will see you looking at it before you see it.
Mm-hmm. And by that point, it's too late. So speaking of things that are too late, let's talk about Texas and the ammosexuals reenacting the Charlie Hebdo shooting with quote armed civilians.
That's just
where everyone still died.
We were talking about this pre-show. It was in the 90s. There was a similar thing where they had a classroom. It was after some, I believe it was right after Columbine.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So they brought together a bunch of people. They got some people, gave them some concealed weapons with paintballs in them. And they had a active shooter enter the classroom environment. See if the armed student could take him out. 0-3.
Yeah.
0-3. The only person who actually drew their weapon and fired had already been capped in the head.
And she hadn't, and she was the one that had never had any training with a weapon.
Yeah, she'd never had any training with a weapon. They gave her 2 hours or so of training right before she went into the classroom. So everything was fresh. It was all fresh.
Which gives them an edge, technically.
Yeah. Because they were going into an environment where they knew that an active shooter would at some point come in and start shooting. They knew this was going to happen. And they still failed.
Yeah, so...
And here we are repeating history and what we already know, and that concealed carry holders are a pipe dream.
Yeah, so a group called The Truth About Guns... tweeted out, or Facebooked, it looks like, we need 40 people for a simulation of the Charlie Hebdo attack. Tomorrow, 6 p.m., Plano, North Texas, Patriot Protection, help! Click on post for details. So whatever they did, you know, they're essentially trying to prove that an armed society is a polite society and that mm-hmm. if everyone had a gun, they would be able to put down such an onslaught.
Not necessarily.
So far, in 30 years, not a single mass shooting has been stopped by an armed civilian. But of course they, that's funny. They call it the Blasturbation Club. Anyway, the gun loving Americans out there, they tried this little experiment
12 times,
and they failed horribly
12 times. Two active shooters who have at least some idea of what they're doing are going to destroy you, especially if they have rifles.
Yeah. So the experiment was a massive flop. The group did indeed gather the requested number of volunteers. Unfortunately for them, that was the most successful part of the adventure. He started shooting, said volunteer Linda Cruz, and I started shooting, and I died. Volunteers gathered on a set that was made to look like the offices of the satirical French magazine that became the target of the terrorist attack after it reprinted the cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. Armed with paintball guns, the volunteer The volunteers took turns playing the role of heroic good guy with a gun in the office. Also armed with paintball guns were two terrorists who appeared to execute the infidels in the scenario. The gunmen were professionals from tactical training company Patriot Protection. Over and over, the armed civilian was killed, along with those gun rights advocates' claim that he or she would have protected. In only two cases was the good guy able to remove even one of the gunmen from the scenario. Only once did the armed civilian survive, when she ran away at the first sound of gunfire. Still got killed, but better than I thought I would, said volunteer Parks Matthew. He said that watching everyone around him die has shown that he should not protect his children if he encounters a shooter in a movie theater. Matthew will ensure that they emerge from the situation fatherless instead.
I need to advance on the threat.
Yeah. If I'm in a movie theater and someone pulls a gun, what am I going to do? I know now I'm not going to just fall on my kids and protect them. I need to advance on the threat.
And you will fail.
Yeah. Of the 12 simulations, not a single one involved the volunteers finding themselves able to kill both shooters. Strangely, the Truth About Guns group has not provided followers with an update. And there's apparently, there's a news report as well, and you can find that within the show notes. We're not going to go give them any more airtime than what we've done. Because it just goes, again, to prove what all the statistics that they're ignoring have already said time and time again. If you add more guns to the scenario, all you end up with is more dead people.
You end up with better armed assailants.
Yeah, because then...
That's what you end up with.
They'll kill the people that don't know what the hell they're doing. And what we've also proven with many of the statistics is the old adage that no war plan ever survives contact with the enemy. As soon as you get into this heated scenario, your brain starts firing off all sorts of chemicals and you get confused, your heart starts racing, you're not really sure what to do. And if you do not have the instincts that these guys do, along with their determination, you are boned.
There are at least two, possibly three different points of contention here. Number one.
Easily.
It is difficult to train someone to take a life.
Yeah.
Even if their own life is in danger, it is difficult for people to make that decision.
Yeah.
And we know this because of the military.
And the police
force. Which had a lot of trouble in Vietnam. With guys intentionally, subconsciously sometimes, but intentionally missing their targets because they did not want to take a human life.
Yeah, in theory, they were shooting to kill, but their bodies betrayed them and tried to shoot to maim, to let them live.
Death. Which was also a problem with the draft, in that you didn't have willing participants in the first place in a lot of cases. But there were also people who were voluntarily enlisted, and those people have problems making the decision to kill.
Well, they don't know until they're there.
It's, you know, just human nature.
We don't grow up in
a natural act to kill another person.
Yeah.
So to say that it's as simple as I give you this gun, you shoot up some paper targets, and you too will be able to defend your life, not necessarily true.
Yeah. It's part of polite society. We don't kill people.
Yeah, we don't.
It's not, it isn't that it's a commandment. It's just that that's not what you do.
That's not in our environment. We watch a lot of it on TV, for sure, but TV and movies, as much as they want to talk about desensitizing us to violence,
it doesn't do it.
That does not a killer make.
No. No. If anything, a lot of these things have shown us that, okay, so they've been shot in the arm. Okay, well, I know I need to put a tourniquet up above that. You know, all it does is teach us, like, triage, you know, but still the reality is that it's horrible and grotesque and unnatural to us. We do not react well to death.
We do and not react well to bullets.
We don't. and that's by design.
Number two is that in a situation like this where you're going a concealed weapon, which is going to be a small caliber handgun.
Yes.
Usually 9mm, sometimes 380, sometimes even lower. And while there are some people who go 40 to 45, 40 to 45 caliber requires a big gun to be stable.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it kicks like a frickin' mule. And you will get off one shot, and then you will spend the next 2.5 seconds lining your sights up again. And that ain't time you got.
Yeah, if, you know, the big shells, it's physics. It's physics. Kinetics, you know, you have to have the mass to absorb the blast from launching the projectile. And if you don't have that and you have that small hand arm, then you have to have all that energy then be dissipated into your arms. And hopefully you're not holding the gun wrong and then break your nose because it recoiled back and hit you.
So that happens.
It happens. You know.
But you're going to go against rifle, which...
It is designed for recoil compensation and accuracy at distance.
It is a more stable platform overall.
Yeah.
To simulate the stress, go to like a high school or something, find their track, run as fast as you can around the track, then grab yourself an airsoft gun and try to hold the sight steady.
Yeah, I mean,
a handgun.
There's a reason why.
Pick up an airsoft rifle. And line that up.
Yeah.
And you will notice immediately the difference.
There's a reason why snipers lay down, have a bipod for their gun, and hold their breath when they fire. It is to still the entire body and the gun itself as much as possible for accuracy.
They get to the point where they are intuitive of their own heart rate.
Yeah.
And they shoot between heartbeats. Literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not making this up. So there's a lot to this, and unless you train all the time and end up with muscle memory of how to do these things and killer instincts that have been somehow proven that you're unaware of,
and
you know, it's not a good scene.
You have the disposition that would allow you to kill another human being.
Yeah. I really think that if I had my choice, I would not carry a gun. I would carry a taser. Every time. Because then I'm not worried that I'm going to kill the person. I'm going to stop them. That's my goal. I'm going to stop them. So I'm bypassing the psychological, you know, aversion to kill them. So I'm going to be slightly more accurate there anyway. And if I don't kill them, then I'm not going to face any prosecution, which is nice too.
Yeah.
Because there are always consequences to your actions.
Yeah.
And, you know, those Good Samaritan laws that we have out there, you know, they're not as robust as they ought to be. A lot of people that are trying to do the right thing in a situation still end up going to jail.
We certainly need more national debate on when deadly force is warranted.
Yeah.
We certainly need more training for people who want to carry firearms. And in order to ensure that they have that training, we honestly need a licensing system.
Yes, we certainly do. And it needs – that license has to come with a certain degree of training. You know, you need to pass that. You know, you should have to go through that training to own a firearm in the first place.
Yeah, I need a license to drive my car back and forth from work.
Yeah.
But I can own an object that can kill someone on the other side of this wall. I didn't have the first training course a day in my life. My training course is on YouTube.
Yeah, there's something very wrong with that. And if anyone tells you differently, their agenda is not with people.
Their agenda is with selling guns.
Yeah. You know, it's not with liberty. It's not with peace. It can't be. It is contradictory to that. I really wish it wasn't. But it's the, smoke
the
and mirrors.
The fact of the
matter is
that
just
the fewer guns you have in amongst the population, the fewer people die as a result of guns.
Yeah.
And this is proven by Japan, which has more people packed in less space than almost any place in the whole fucking country of the United States.
Yeah.
And they killed less people last year overall as a result of gunshot wounds than we had per 100,000.
We have a problem. Bottom line, we just have a problem. So we can now move away from the ammosexuals.
Soapbox.
Yes, the soapbox done. Good job.
If I had a mic, I'd drop it.
Yeah. Don't drop the mics. They're expensive. We don't want to do that. Well, actually, okay. We have one left that we have to go into. Oh, Florida, George Zimmerman.
Oh, he's back. Yeah.
Because this parlays so neatly into our soapbox rant.
Yeah, so I found this one on the Florida Man Twitter, which is entertaining for eons to come.
Because Florida.
Because Florida Man. and they put this one under the headline of Florida Man Assaults a White Guy, Gets Arrested Instantly This Time.
This time.
This time.
That was the key to it's like, wait a second, what?
Yeah, but I think part of the key is he assaulted the guy, he didn't kill him. So.
Yeah. So
there's another side to the story all of a sudden.
Is there? So the headline out on Christian Science Monitor, csmonitor.com, gun hero, they actually put those little scare quotes around it. George Zimmerman ordered to surrender arms after assault. And they have a video.
You cannot own weapons once you're a felon.
He is out of jail on bond of a $5,000 bond for assault charge. Should we play the video?
I didn't watch it, so I don't know what's on it.
Well, okay. All right, everybody, here we go. Hopefully there won't be an ad.
New at 6, we were there as George Zimmerman walked out of jail again.
George, haven't you learned your lesson yet?
And this time, he's accused of attacking his girlfriend.
George Zimmerman first made headlines nearly 3 years ago when he shot and killed Trayvon Martin, but he was acquitted of murder the year after. Since then, this is his second arrest. He's been living in a house owned by his parents in Lake Mary. Channel 9's Anthony DiLorenzo is there live tonight. And Anthony, this latest incident didn't involve a gun, but he still has to surrender all his firearms.
And Ken, the judge said out of an abundance of caution, he'd have to turn over all of his firearms and stay away from Volusia County, where his girlfriend lives. This is now the third domestic-related run-in for George Zimmerman since his acquittal of murder.
In a familiar scene, George Zimmerman walked out of the Seminole County Jail and fist-bumped a fellow arrestee. The 31-year-old posted $5,000 bond after being arrested for throwing a wine bottle at his girlfriend.
Having been charged with the crime of aggravated assault with domestic violence with a weapon.
Zimmerman seemed relaxed as he stood before a judge in jail. Lake Mary police arrested him late Friday at a home owned by his parents.
And if charges are filed, Mr. Zimmerman stands ready to defend against them.
Defense attorney Don West is standing by Zimmerman's side again. The same lawyer who helped secure his 2013 acquittal in the death of Trayvon Martin.
It's been a devastating experience that he's had, that he's working through. And again, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know how it's manifesting itself. I'm concerned, obviously, as we are here again.
Lake Mary police say the domestic dispute happened Monday at Zimmerman's home. Later that night, officers made contact with his girlfriend during a traffic stop. She told them what happened, but investigators weren't able to make contact with Zimmerman until yesterday and took him to jail.
It's clear he hasn't been very lucky with the ladies the last few months. But beyond that, no, I don't have a comment.
And now despite the fact that Zimmerman is facing up to 5 years in prison if he's convicted of this crime, he could be seen laughing in court during his first appearance today. He's due back in court next month. Reporting live in Lake Mary tonight, I'm Anthony DiLorenzo, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
All I got to say, is if I picked a fight with a young black teen, killed him, and got away with it.
Sorry, it autoplayed the next video.
That's okay. If I picked a fight with somebody, killed them, and got away with it, I probably wouldn't have much respect for court proceedings either. Or laws, or people.
Yeah, I...
My point of contention was that he did everything right until he got out of his car, and he essentially picked a fight. You know, he goes up and he yells at this kid, and then he turns his back on him. Like, how fucking stupid are you?
Yeah.
Honestly. So I'm going to go up to somebody that I perceive to be dangerous or a danger to the neighborhood, yell at them, and then turn my back on them. And I'm definitely going to make sure that there's nobody else with me backing me up, because we don't want them to get the idea that they might get their ass kicked.
I can't even.
It's hard to put into words.
There aren't a whole lot of words for this guy. He is a thug.
He is a thug. He just needs a hoodie, apparently.
Well, maybe
we will see him for what he is.
Well, maybe he was. Maybe that's why he shot Trevon Martin, so that he could get his hoodie.
Hoodies are cheap, though.
I know.
For the price of the gun that he shot him with, he could have bought like 50 hoodies.
Yeah, he's got a really great lawyer, though. Very political lawyer.
No, he's got a lawyer who knows where the money is, and he's just milking him.
I don't. How can he have any more money? He's living with his parents. And
we're still getting paid somehow.
I know.
They don't work for free.
No, but he is advertising.
It's possible because that his parents.
He's a celebrity.
He's a celebrity in the right wing gun crowd. So yeah. It's possible he's got fundraising there, which I know he got some funds from them for the original court proceedings when he was defending himself for picking a fight and killing the kid.
In an interview with Armed America Radio in December, Zimmerman warned gun owners to be careful. Quote, go to the range to practice. Keep your guns in a safe location. And primarily, now that I know that I'm $2.5 million in debt just in lawyer's fees, I paid over $360,000 in hard costs to the state, he told listeners, I would definitely invest in getting some type of self-defense insurance and, again, arming yourself with the knowledge of what you can and what you should or shouldn't do after the incident.
The first rule of self-defense, as it should be taught anywhere, is if you can avoid an altercation, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, do not get yourself into such situations.
You do not willingly walk into a situation which could be dangerous.
I was unaware that there is self-defense insurance. It should not be surprising, I suppose, because you can insure body parts. You know, if you happen to make a living off them. You know, things like that. But it never entered my mind that you could get self-defense insurance.
That is interesting.
So, I guess that's the takeaway from this article. I learned something. The more you know. but he's rotten to the core. We'll see what happens because, Florida man. Keeping with the tragic nature of how he managed to get into some popularity, let's go to Boston, where some Black Lives Matter protesters blocked a highway with concrete barrels with their arms in them on the highway.
They literally concreted themselves to the barrels.
Inside the barrels, yeah. This is some seriously stupid things. I have had chemical burns from lime and concrete, that's serious business. So I really hope that they have a little bit of protection.
It looks
on.
Like they have plastic.
You know, I don't know. I can't tell what they've done here.
I certainly hope that their arms are wrapped in plastic. I'm praying that their arms are wrapped in plastic.
Protesters with arms chained together inside the barrel on Route 83 in Milton. As the article says, law enforcement and commuters were equally baffled this morning by a Black Lives Matter demonstration that saw Interstate 93 blocked in Milton and Medford, Massachusetts. Some activists had apparently managed to seal their arms inside 1,200-pound barrels of concrete. And then there's protesters linking arms out on I-93. This is all stuff that that got released on Twitter. They shut down Milton. Two lanes traffic. Protesters still on 95 or 93. I'm sorry. And then state police were using a rather big and nasty saw to cut through the barrel. Then they also had to shield off the people. So they're trying to get them out of the barrel. And on the barrel, it's a white barrel, but they had somebody come back with a pre-made stencil that said, "Caution, moving barrel will cause injury and prevent disengagement."
Disengagement?
I don't know what that means. I'm not even sure they knew what it means. So that 23 protesters were arrested, according to WCVB, Channel 5, which quoted participant Katie Seitz on the reason for the obstruction. Quote, "Today our nonviolent direct action is meant to expose the reality that Boston is a city where white commuters and students use the city and leave. White, while black and brown communities are targeted by police, exploited, and displaced." A post on Facebook page, Black Lives Matter Boston, further explained the action and went on to list individuals killed by Boston police in the past 15 years. I think there's value in it, but, wow, really chaining yourself inside with your arms inside a 50-gallon drum and
full of concrete,
and then filling it with concrete. In the winter, in Boston, on a highway. Wow. I don't know.
He certainly got notoriety.
Oh wow, you know what? There's the top picture shows two people with their arms inside one barrel.
Yes.
And I see another barrel on its side with another person with their arm inside that one. Off in the background. So there's multiple people did that kind of, they went that far. I don't know. It's obviously not a farce since they had to bring out, a big gas powered 18 inch cutting saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. I would just so be afraid that it's like, okay, there go my arms.
Right? Or both our hands.
Yeah.
Shit.
I mean, that's a real good chance of losing limbs and useful appendages like your fingers.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Not cool at all. I think you could have done better, really. Though the next picture with the arms linking, where they were linking across, trying to get a zoom in on that one, but something looks funny on their arms too.
They got some sort of tubes.
Yeah. It's like a Chinese finger puzzle or something. It's weird.
While I agree with the end of their message.
Oh wait, okay, they're like trash bags that are duct taped to their sleeves.
It's gotta be some sort of tube though, because it's very uniformly round.
Well, so is people's arms.
Some of them are crinkled. I think
not quite like that.
I think they might have like handcuffed themselves together and somebody wrapped them or something.
Maybe.
But wow, there's a lot of dedication here.
There is a lot of dedication. I salute their dedication to their goal. That's not how I get my point across.
Yeah, not us either. You see, we have a podcast for that.
That's one way of doing it.
Yeah.
I honestly considered, I did not want to run it, but I'll pitch it. Maybe it'll get there to somebody who does want to run it.
Okay.
The best way to fight oppression is to make sure it's always on video and that it gets distributed as efficiently as possible.
That's true.
So what I was going to suggest is that it sucks that it has to be this way, but essentially a drive cam system in every person, every minority person's car. So when they get pulled over doing everything right, and the cop comes up and just immediately starts screaming, it's always on video.
And I think that's becoming more popular.
Well, they're doing it with cell phones.
Yes.
Yeah. But
dash cams are cheap now, though.
We haven't reached Russia. And Russia is the benchmark for this because the police there are so corrupt that everybody has a drive cam in their car now, which is why we have video footage of that giant meteor crashing and blowing off over the town.
We get a lot of really interesting video that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise. I've seen a lot of dash cams and, you know, that have come out of Russia of weird things, you know, saving animals on the street, you know, and any number of like weird accidents where like 18 cars surrounded a guy and he was still walking across the street and didn't get hit.
There's that video of the woman who, was effortlessly ripping apart her car. And then there was a video that I saw of a guy rear-ending a bus, getting out of his car, yelling at the bus, and then a series of people dressed up as Disney mascots, Mickey Mouse, Goofy, and Donald Duck came out and beat his ass, and then got on the bus and drove away. It's the funniest video I've seen in a long time. I'll have to find that on my pick.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's impressive. Okay.
But we need that here.
Yeah.
And we need that to highlight that the police in this country have become part of a system, very cyclical system that's very sick.
The sick cyclical system.
Yes. People don't realize a little bit of history here. In the wake of integration, a lot of laws were passed and places were rezoned for the sole intent and purpose of moving black people into communities where they could not get gainful employment. And so they would be segmented off from good people, which is white society. And that's why you see on a lot of maps still today, you know, in the wake of the census, where they have those dots to say, here's people of color, here's white people. And you can see a friggin' train track going down on one side of it.
Yeah.
Is the black people. On the other side is the white people. The invisible line in the sand.
Quote, the other side of the tracks. All of
that came into being in the wake of integration.
Yeah.
To follow that up, a lot of petty laws were put into place. Broken windows policing, which we touched on in a previous episode.
Yeah.
And a burgeoning private prison system that wants inmates have all conspired together to create a situation where cops actively, aggressively engage people of color to throw them in jail and to basically bilk them of money to fund their own police departments.
Yeah. All those quotas and everything.
To serve and protect doesn't work when their funding comes from their activities.
It can't be the order of the day when their action speaks so loudly the opposite.
know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm very resentful of the fact that every time I see a police officer, even if I'm not doing anything wrong, the hair starts to prickle on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen next? And I haven't even had anything bad happen.
They have, the Fraternal Order of Police is something that should not be. And the reason it should not be is because they should not be different than people. They're still people. They're still citizens. They still have to theoretically abide by all the same laws.
Yeah.
We know that ain't so.
No.
We know that because of the friggin' badges that they hand out to their family members. Do not give another cop's family member a ticket.
Yeah, the blue wall.
The blue wall.
Yeah, it's something.
That is inherently harmful to doing their job.
It is. It is. It's Southern good old boy politics, but taken everywhere.
Yeah.
So, well, enough of that. Enough of that. So a study on January 12th, that was Monday, that came out of Lund University in Sweden, indicated that inherited viruses may be responsible for creating the complex neural networks that make up the human brain. I'll just say that again. Inherited viruses may be responsible for creating the complex neural networks that make up your brain. The Matrix was right, man. We are a virus. That's what I gotta say about that.
Partially.
Partially. Well, we're also, a great deal of us is bacteria and things that are not us, you know, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are an interesting little ecosystem all into ourselves. But anyway, many, many years, the androgenous retroviruses that comprise about 5% of the human DNA were thought to be junk. That is sequences of
androgenous?
Androgenous? It's endo. Endogenous. Endo, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm not seeing the words.
E-N-D-O-G-E-N-O-U-S. Endogenous.
Endogenous.
Endogenous retroviruses. See, I can pronounce some things, just not names. So junk, that is sequences of DNA that do not encode protein sequences and therefore cannot self-replicate. However, Johan Jacobsen? See, I can't do names, but, and his colleagues at Lund University claim that these retroviruses became integrated into the transcriptional machinery of brain cells that can replicate. In fact, the researchers argue these retroviruses play a crucial role in the basic functioning of the brain, regulating which genes are expressed and when they are allowed to do so. Quoting Jacobsen, we have been able to observe that these viruses are activated specifically in the brain cells that have an important regulatory role. We believe that the role of retroviruses can contribute to explaining why brain cells in particular are so dynamic and multifaceted in their function. It may also be the case that these viruses' more or less complex functions in various species can help us to understand why we are so different. That's amazing stuff. Currently, we look for genetic factors linked to various diseases. We usually look for the genes we are familiar with, which make up a mere 2% of the genome. Now we're opening up the possibility of looking at a much larger part of the genetic material, which was previously considered unimportant.
This is, that's cool stuff.
Yeah, the image of the brain becomes more complex, but the area in which to search for errors linked to diseases with genetic component, such as neurodegenerative diseases, psychiatric illnesses, and brain tumors, also increases. So this could definitely open up an entire other fields of research as to why we are the way we are and how we can make that better.
We're starting to understand a lot more about the brain. I just threw this one in here.
Oh,
brand new link right underneath.
Lego worm brain. What is that? Oh dear, what have you done? We put a worm's mind in a Lego robot's body. What? A wheeled Lego robot may not look like a worm, but it thinks like one after programmers gave it the neuron connections in a C. elegans roundworm. What the fuck? The simulation isn't exact. The program has some simplifications on the thresholds needed to trigger a neuron firing, for example, but the behavior is impressive considering that no instructions were programmed into this robot. All it has is a network of connections mimicking those of the brain worm. What? There's a video of this Lego robot. Wow. It stops and backs up and does, oh, this is, what is this? It's claimed that the robot behaved in ways that are similar, to observe C. elegans stimulations of the nose, stopped forward motion, touching the anterior and posterior touch sensors made the robot move forward and back accordingly. Stimulating the food sensor made the robot move forward. What the hell? Well, that's something interesting to look at. David, you with me? Hello? You know what? I think we lost David all of a sudden. We still have his ghost in the machine, but it's not doing anything. How tragic. He has been having internet problems lately. So we'll just have to soldier on. So that's out there. That's a weird one. And now we have a couple other interesting things. The Pope has, of course, been very controversial. And, you know, he's made our show quite often lately. And he has shocked the world with his views on breastfeeding. Yes, the infallible Pope settles it, and breastfeeding in public is no harm to God. So what's your problem? He says, mothers, give your children milk, and even now, if they cry because they are hungry, breastfeed them. Don't worry. Francis's originally prepared text for his homily contained the phrase, give them milk, which prompted the Pope's aside, but in speaking casually to the mothers before him, he altered the phrase to, oh great, it's Italian, alla tetelli, which means breastfeed them in Italian, adding that the mothers should not hesitate. So that's really good stuff. 20 girls and 13 baby boys were present for the baptism before Michelangelo's frescoes. Pope Francis asked all present to consider the less fortunate mothers of the world, stating that there are too many, unfortunately, who can't give food to their children. At least one mother was seen openly breastfeeding before the Pope's invitation to do so, perhaps recalling an earlier similar statement made by the Pope and understanding his position on the subject clearly. Baptism, of course, is the sacrament where infants and blah, 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 you know, brought into the, yeah. Anyway. So that's, again, good guy Pope makes himself known, and away we go. So, okay. Elon Musk, who we've also spoke of with SpaceX and Tesla and some of his other, amazing daring do's of, you has returned.
I has.
Excellent. Did you spank your cable modem?
I did.
Okay. Well, I just covered, the Pope on breastfeeding, and now we're talking about Elon Musk.
Okay. So,
Elon Musk, who we've covered on the show before, a favorite of the show, he has donated $10 million to make sure that artificial intelligence doesn't go the way of Skynet.
It's an important task.
He's really concerned, and he's not the only one that's concerned about...
Stephen Hawking is concerned.
Yeah.
And they make a good case.
They do. Of course, we have plenty of sci-fi movies that, that illustrate the case with gory detail. The Intrepid Inventor...
We've got entire shows based off of this concept.
Oh, yeah.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
You know, there's everything involved with Terminator. What else happened? There's other movies, I'm sure. But
those of course.
Are the most iconic I can think of the top of my head.
Yeah, of course. Let's see.
The problem is in evolution.
Yeah. The machines that we have built are iterating certainly much faster than their biological creators. So we, the progenitors of the new species.
It's doubling in power every 18 months.
Yeah. Moore's Law. Yeah. The Intrepid Inventor and Entrepreneur announced a donation of $10 million to help fund research to, quote, keep AI beneficial to humanity today. The funds go to the Future of Life Institute, FLI. I'd never heard of this. An organization run by volunteers dedicated to research aimed at mitigating existential risks facing humanity. I want to be a part of that organization.
Right?
Mitigating existential risks facing humanity. And specifically, those related to our ongoing progress towards AI that can approach human capabilities. Musk offered a statement along with the announcement, noting that he is in agreement with a long list of prominent AI researchers who have signed an open letter calling for exactly the type of work that FLI is doing. Quote, here are all these leading AI researchers saying that AI safety is important, said Musk, referring to his letter. I agree with them, so I'm today committing $10 million to support research aimed at keeping AI beneficial for humanity.
It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
For those that don't understand the arguments against, you know, unrestricted AI research and the evolution reference, computers can evolve at a rate far in excess of us. It takes millions of years for us to develop new features to combat new threats, or tens of thousands of years, generations upon generations at least.
Yeah.
A generation of computer can go for 8 months and be replaced.
Sometimes less than that.
Yeah, sometimes less than that. And you got to figure the current rate of Moore's Law is based off of human beings doing the work of designing these things.
Yeah. Eventually,
who can only work so many hours in a day. The computer brain never gets tired. So you end up with a curve of accelerating advancement over time. So where once computers and artificial intelligence starts reprogramming and redesigning itself, it will do so at an increasing rate over time.
Yeah.
Which is where it goes out of control of all of humanity. It cannot be contained. It cannot be stopped.
Yeah, and there are great arguments for why it would then be an enemy of mankind.
Because mankind's assholes.
Yeah. So.
And anything we can't control, we tend to destroy. So it would see us as an existential threat, rightly.
Speaking of that.
Speaking of the $10 million announced today.
Well.
To keep it as our servant.
Yes, but speaking of how humans are potentially a threat. In the journal Science today, it was announced through a study that human activity has pushed Earth beyond 4 of 9 planetary boundaries. Yeah. This is disturbing.
Reason 555 of why we need to get off this rock.
Yeah. I'll just read from the article. At the rate things are going, the Earth is going in the coming decades could cease to be, quote, safe operating space, end quote, for human beings. That is the conclusion of a new paper published Thursday in the journal Science by 18 researchers trying to gauge the breaking points in the natural world. The paper contends that we have already crossed 4 planetary boundaries. They are the extinction rate, deforestation, the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and the flow of nitrogen and phosphorus used on land as fertilizer into the oceans. What the science has shown is that human activities, economic growth, technology, consumption, are destabilizing the global environment, said Will Steffen, who holds appointments in the Australian National University and the Stockholm Resilience Center, and is the lead author on the paper. These are not future problems, but rather urgent matters, according to Steffen, who said that the economic boom since the 1950s and the globalized economy have accelerated the transgression of the boundaries. No one knows exactly when push will come to shove, but he said the possible destabilization of the Earth system as a whole could occur in a time frame of decades out to a century. This is the gloomiest thing that I've read in a really long time. Now, you can live in a destabilized system for a long time.
Yes.
Much longer than a century.
As long as you're not accelerating the rate of descent or of destabilization.
Right. Or trying to work it back out somehow. And certainly there are people out there that are trying to slow down and eventually reverse the great inertia that is pushing our
biosphere to the breaking point?
Yeah, well, our assault on the biosphere, basically. You know, it's sad that we're going to have to learn to terraform a planet because we destroyed our own.
We'll have to terraform this one. For one.
Yeah, but we can't do it when we're sitting on it. So.
Yeah, well.
So we have
to find a way.
So we have the GOP that's trying to get rid of environmental protections along with.
And they are anti-NASA.
Along with parks and reserves, and they're anti-NASA. They're going to be the death of us, which is why I'm not a Republican. Should anybody be curious.
I just thought of a good analogy for what we're doing to the planet. You imagine going to a park with your kid.
Mm-hmm.
You put your kid on the swing. The swing is our environment.
Okay.
But you can only stand in one spot, that spot where you initially push the kid. As time progresses, you get stronger and you start pushing harder, but you can't move from that spot. So the kid starts coming back at you faster. You have to push back harder.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we will push so hard that we won't be able to push back the elements. Our air conditioning and whatnot will not be enough.
Yeah. That's an interesting analogy, but I think a weak one.
Possibly. It sounded a lot better in my brain.
Well, it's only because I'm a parent and I've done that. that's the only reason. Otherwise, it sounds good. To carry on with this, the researchers focused on 9 separate planetary boundaries that were first identified by scientists in a 2009 paper. These boundaries set theoretical limits on changes to the environment and include ozone depletion, fresh water use, ocean acidification, atmospheric aerosol pollution, and the introduction of exotic chemicals and modified organisms. Beyond each planetary boundary is a zone of uncertainty
The zone is meant to acknowledge and the inherent uncertainties in the calculations and to offer decision makers a bit of a buffer so that they can potentially take action before it's too late to make a difference. Beyond that zone of uncertainty is the unknown, planetary conditions unfamiliar to us. The boundary is not like the edge of a cliff, said Ray Pierre Humbert in an expert on Earth systems at the University of Chicago. They're a little bit more like danger warnings, like high temperature gauges in your, on your car, he said.
Hmm. Idiot lights.
Yeah. Pierre Humbert, who was not involved in the paper published in Science, added that a planetary boundary is like an avalanche warning tape on a ski slope. The scientists say there is no certainty that catastrophe will follow the transgressions of these boundaries. Rather, the scientists cite the precautionary principle. We know that human civilization has risen and flourished in the past 10,000 years, an epoch known as the Holocene, under relatively stable environmental conditions. No one knows what will happen to civilization if planetary conditions continue to change, but the authors of the science paper write that the planet, quote, is likely to be much less hospitable to the development of human societies, end quote. The goal of the paper is not to offer solutions, but simply to provide information. This is the kind of report card exploiting new data from the past 5 years. It's not just a list of Fs. The ozone boundary is the best example of world leaders responding swiftly to a looming environmental disaster after the discovery of an expanding ozone hole caused by man-made chemicals, chlorofluoral hydrocarbons. The nations of the world banned CFCs in the 1980s. This young field of research draws much from disciplines as ecology, geology, chemistry, atmospheric science, marine biology, and economics. It's known generally as Earth systems science. I like that term. Earth systems science. It is an uncertain thing. And much like what we've been dealing with climate change, climate change is certainly a part of the Earth system science, but I like that they're adding economics in there and marine biology and all these other things. It's more comprehensive. And that's the real problem, I think, that we have with those that deny that we're capable of changing things.
Just off the top of my head, I'd say we're living in the wrong place. Because the U.S. is probably the worst place to be when shit starts getting real. The first day people start going hungry, that's when the riots start.
Yeah. We are enormously dependent. Enormously dependent on...
We're also enormously violent.
That's true.
Enormously so.
As earlier stories indicated, yes.
Well, you only need to look at Tokyo and Fukushima, or Japan and Fukushima.
Yeah.
And the U.S. with Katrina.
Yeah.
I'd much rather be in Japan.
And things that happened in Manhattan with Sandy.
Sandy, it was Manhattan, New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, things were not pretty.
They weren't pretty. No. A lot of people died, and it wasn't because of the water.
No. So, I encourage people that are maybe on the fence, because once somebody's already made up their mind, you know, you can't really do much about it. But I'm encouraged by having more information. More information can change my mind. Mm-hmm. And because I follow that scientific method, that auto-correcting methodology, where if it is proven and, you know, it then supersedes older data, you know, it can grow, it can change, it can prove itself wrong.
so far, that's what we've done time and time again. And we've reached the point where we understand more. And that current understanding is that we are fucking ourselves horribly. And we need to do something about that if we would like the fucking to stop.
I think I would. Were I king?
Where are you king?
I would reach out to the environmental groups that are trying to save the rhinos and the whales and all that.
Yeah.
And accumulate all their funding to getting off the planet as a goal.
An ark ship or something?
Colonize immune. Colonize the freaking asteroid belt. Something. Off the world. We gotta go.
Yeah. We can do amazing things when we're pressed. Because
we can.
At some point, you know, the people always will say that it's too expensive to do something. At some point, you reach the point that...
It's too expensive that, not to.
No. You reach that critical point where money is no longer relevant.
Do you want to die?
All it is, it becomes truly socialized where there is no money. All there is death or survival. Take your pick. If you're working on the survival end, we'll feed you.
Hell, we'll take you with us.
Exactly. I'm part of that team. You know, I don't want anything bad to happen to us. I want the world to go on, but
It may go on without people, but it will go on.
The world will continue without us. I would like us to continue as well. Here, we have made mistakes. We are children.
We continue to make mistakes.
Yeah. We are children. We do not understand the problems that we've created. It's like a teenager with their first car.
I'm not certain that that's the right analogy.
They're going to run it hard. And they're going to wreck it.
It's like...
The next car...
They understand. They understand what's at stake. They don't care. I think that's what it really boils down to.
When I was a teenager and I got my first car, it was a little bit different for me because I did pay for it myself. In that, I knew a lot about it, but I still beat it up because I didn't know any better. I just didn't know any better. And of course, I had my parents to back me up if I really got in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have parents as a species.
I think part of the problem is that as a species and individually,
mm-hmm.
We're narrow-sighted.
Well, very. Very, yeah. It's inconvenient
to look beyond your bedroom. Is a little different than yours. My car just broke. You didn't have to beat it up. And when it broke, I fixed it. So I had an appreciation for... I didn't have money in the car. I did not buy it. Mm-hmm. But I had blood in that car.
But you see, the thing is, you worked to fix it. That automatically puts you above most of the people out there. Because really, and especially now, cars are too complex to even do that. You have to take them someplace most of the time.
For a small snippet of time. Once electric cars take over, there's almost nothing to them.
Yeah. But then my analogy certainly goes out the window. But really it's just if you don't have a real invested interest in it,
You know, a lot of people say they went to college on a full ride scholarship and flunked out because they didn't have anything really invested in it. They weren't paying. And then after many years, they decided to go back to school. And they're now working their tails off and they're paying for it all. But that's because they grew up and knew what they needed to do. As a species, we are still growing up and we've made a lot of mistakes.
I think that we're going to continue making mistakes until they're irreparable. Your analogy might actually be spot on. This is our first car.
Yeah. First Except planet, first car.
There's got people going to die in it.
Yeah. Well, that happens too. That happens too. And we've certainly buried plenty already. Not necessarily because of the things we've done to the planet, but because of our still growing up. Yeah. So we're a messy species.
We can't even stop killing each other over oil.
Yeah. The dead petrified plants that have become oil. You know, that's much more important apparently than lives. Which I fundamentally understand it at a blood-curdling, economic, cruel calculus kind of way. But I refuse to acknowledge that viscerally. It's not worth it. That's never worth it.
No.
I can see where it could be, you know, trigger points for people and get them motivated to do horrible things. But that's not what drives me. So.
No.
It's too terrible for words. So please, if you have a love of the planet and you'd like to keep it, then the only thing that we can do is act and act quickly in every way, little way that we can.
If you're not as attached to the planet, you could do like I want to do and get off of it.
I think we have to do both at the same time though. We have to start saving the planet, and we have to start trying to get off of it.
Well, people are and have been trying to push back against the forces that are destroying the planet.
Yeah.
And they are failing.
Well, there's a great deal of inertia behind the Scrooge McDucks with all their money.
Well, yeah, because that's the way we've always done it. It's always been a powerful motivator of mankind.
Yeah.
Up until the point where, you know, the rats are overflowing because the garbage men went on strike and you've got the bubonic plague everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you start doing things a little differently.
Yeah.
But in general, to get the wheels of power to really move, like really move, usually takes a horrendous catastrophe.
Yeah. It does, and that's been historically accurate. You know, when we are properly motivated, we can do miraculous things. We can do amazing things. Typically only for short periods of time, though, because then our attention spans kind of go away.
Well, I'm behind Elon Musk 100%. I hope that he develops a technology with SpaceX to get us off this rock.
Yeah, it's going to take more people like Elon Musk to step forward and, you know, really be forward thinking.
Between Elon Musk and if the Lockheed Skunk Works can actually follow through and produce a fusion generator in the next 5 years, we stand a realistic chance of developing the spacecraft that'll get us off this rock in a reliable manner.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be that quick. 5 years seems small. Seems really small.
It does seem small, but I'm also of the mindset that they probably already have it working.
Maybe. Of course, they're also firing up CERN at its full power this year. They're bringing that back up online. I didn't add that as a story, but it's going to be some amazing stuff that we're finally going to see there. You know, it's been down for a while. Well, yeah, we've been seeing amazing things come out all the time. But now they're looking for even smaller particles. Neutrinos that what they're theorizing now, that neutrinos are more like that mythical particle like a tachyon, that
actually does move faster than light and essentially moves through the fourth dimension.
Hmm.
I mean, that changes the way we look at everything. Amazing theories out there that are so mathematically beyond me, I'm just going to have to chew some popcorn and let people like Neil deGrasse Tyson tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
So we've got one last thing, and that's just so that people know, we are not completely irrelevant in modernizing things. It's taken many, many years, but now America's most ambitious infrastructure project of the century is really truly underway, in a kickoff. When was this? It was a little while ago, but it's been rolling a little bit since 2008.
Yeah.
And this is a high speed rail in California.
The first one, not in the world.
Not in the world, but in the United States.
I understand the lobbying pressure that has prevented this from being a reality.
Yeah.
And that is to say, where high-speed rail operates,
mm-hmm.
regional jets go away.
Ah. Yeah, so it's again, down to petroleum interests and things like that.
It's petroleum and airline lobbies.
Yeah. High-speed rail in California got started in 2008 when voters approved Proposition 1A, a $9.95 billion bond measure to begin construction. Shortly thereafter, President Obama made high-speed rail a priority in 2009 stimulus, with $8 billion earmarked for that for projects throughout the country. California eventually scooped up $3.5 billion of that after conservative governors in Ohio, Wisconsin, and fuck you, Florida, returned their funds in 2010. Officials expected to start laying steel in September 2012 on the first segment, a 29-mile stretch from Fresno to Medina. The idea was that building the Central Valley first would be cheaper than securing land in the pricey Bay Area or Los Angeles Basin. Then, of course, there's lawsuits and all sorts of NIMBYs, the not in my backyard farm owners, and, you know, lots and lots and lots of politics over this. So, but finally, it's actually taking some shape and it's really starting to work. So we should actually see some real modern high speed trains in the great state of California. Strange, that liberal bastion out there on the West Coast. California, since the beginning, has undertaken big tasks and entertained big ideas, Governor Brown said at Wednesday's inaugural. Without a signature achievement like the bullet train, the public's enthusiasm for such big ideas can falter. The antidote to such malaise is to actually deliver on promises, one shovel full of dirt at a time. And that is true. We just have to keep going. It's the only way.
Really?
It's the only way we ever get there.
The simplest way to do this is to take two lanes off the highway and run it right down the middle.
Yeah. But then that impacts current infrastructure.
The current infrastructure is overloaded.
Right. However, it would be absolutely devastating to impact that even further.
Short term.
Yes, but short term.
They are out of land to put roads in L.A. Literally, they are LA's butted up against buildings on both sides.
LA's
there
bad.
Is no more building lanes, and they're adding more people.
Yeah, well, in such a situation, in such a situation, I would suggest that they need elevated trains.
Could do.
Yeah, that seems to be an even better solution. You know, you might take one lane of traffic then. Of course, then you're only running, you know, one lane of train, potentially, but that's often all that it ever is. But hey, this is amazing stuff. Finally, we're getting somewhere. And we do have plenty of other countries, you know, China and Japan, Germany. They've all got high-speed rail. So.
And it's good stuff.
It's fantastic stuff. Amazing. Of course, any trail derailment is a fantastic accident.
What, 300 miles an hour? Yes.
Yeah. Well, no. Any train derailment is fantastic. It's so much kinetic energy.
Yeah.
That it's devastating, even if it's going 30 miles an hour.
But they get up to 70, some of those trains.
Yes, they certainly can.
75 miles an hour is where those trains top out at here in the state. In Japan, they top out, I want to say 375 miles an hour.
Something I like think. That. The one that they're planning to link San Francisco and Los Angeles is scheduled to run at 220 miles per hour.
That's pretty reasonable speed for high-speed rail.
Yeah. So cutting the travel time in half.
Obscene.
Hmm?
The maglev?
Yeah.
That's just obscene. The speeds those go to that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're also much safer, though, because there's much less chance of them actually jumping the track because of the way the maglev is built.
Yeah, it's almost physically impossible.
It's less like a railroad and more like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Where it is really tied in. It can't jump off the track. So it could do a loop-de-loop and you'd be fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see maglev trains butting up against the sound barrier pretty soon.
They probably could, yeah. They probably could. I don't know what kind of compression wave that would. It would probably just diminish performance so much that they'd keep it back away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that could be some amazing
stuff.
Well,
there was a land vehicle that broke the sound barrier.
Yes, but at enormous cost, and it was...
It was basically two engines with a cockpit.
Yeah.
And they were jet engines.
It was an engine with fantastically small wheels that were designed to be able to run at that speed, and a small fireproof cockpit. Yeah, it was not exactly a luxury liner by any means. Yeah, to be breaking the speed of sound and possibly have some cocktails in the back car. Now that's a future I can get behind.
You might be doing that in a submarine.
In a submarine?
China. So, little backstory.
It's like, wait, where are you going with this?
In the 1960s, Russia developed a supercavitating torpedo. It is basically an underwater rocket. That creates a air bubble around the outside of the torpedo, so it's got almost no drag. And it's rocket powered. And it goes faster than the speed of sound underwater.
Oh my.
Fast forward 50 years. China has announced that they're developing a super cavitating submarine that can go from Shanghai to Los Angeles in 100 minutes.
Wait. A submarine from Shanghai to Los Angeles? Through the Pacific.
Through the ocean. 100 minutes.
Well, we are certainly in the future now, aren't we?
they're working on it.
Wow. That hurts my head. What time is it? Okay, yeah, it's 11:50. Okay, that's it. Yeah. I'm done. On that note, you've blown my brain up. I can think no more. Boom. Head rush. This week I did an awful lot of driving and was able to complete a 22.5-hour audiobook. It is called The Abyss Beyond Dreams, Chronicle of the Fallers, Book 1, which kind of leads me to believe there's going to be at least another couple books, probably, by one of my favorite authors, Peter F. Hamilton, and read by one of my favorite readers, John Lee. I highly recommend it, but you can't possibly enjoy it as much as I did without reading the 5 books before it. So that would be Pandora's Star, Judas Unchained, and then the 3 books in the Void trilogy. You got to read those before you get to this. So you got at least a good month, maybe if you're slow at going through your audiobooks, you got a long time. You got a long time to catch up. But it's a good one. It's worth it. And, it came out earlier in 2014. So it's a pretty new release. I didn't even know about it until it popped up and said, oh, yes, I will read that right now. Thank you. What was that?
Huh?
I heard something.
You might have heard through my headphones.
I must have.
I pulled up the video, which is now linked as my pick.
Okay, what is this video, and should I play it?
Play it after the show.
Oh, dear. Okay.
It's the mascots beating up the guy in Russia.
Oh, the mascots. Okay. And to see that, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to go out to our webpage. But also, that wraps up the show. So this is my cue to bring up, eventually, the end credits. There we go. Okay, that's it for us tonight. We'll be back next Friday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, the conversations ought to continue on the web. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y radio.com for all the links right at the top of the page. And do watch us live and chat in the IRC. If you have liked what we do here, you can help keep the lights on. You can follow us. Follow the Help Us link on the webpage and go over to patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N, and contribute a little bit to the show. If that's too rich for you financially, of course you can contribute to the show with topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets you have lying around. You can also send hate mail that I'll ignore, and unsolicited advice by emailing at orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. That's orellyradiopodcast. Also, you can leave a voicemail at 470-222-ORLY or 6759. You can post and vote on stories on the subreddit. I got to get over there and see what's going on. And, hey, how about you leave us a review on whatever platform you found us on? You know, whether it be Stitcher, Spreaker, maybe out on YouTube even. And, of course, there's always the ubiquitous iTunes. You can also go on. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, and subscribe on that YouTube channel that I mentioned. And, well, that'll do it. Can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. And until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. The music was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomtech.com. See ya. Bye.